listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Well, good show planned for you guys today. Scott Dixon is in here. You guys won a ton of IndyCar races and also done a lot of Le Mans, 24-hour Le Mans. We talk about that, driving the Ford GT. Take a deep dive into that.
We touch a little bit on the Jaguar F-Pace SVR.
Mm-hmm. We get into some Australian and New Zealand big V8 car racing as well. Very interesting segment that a lot of people may not know too much about, but if you go on YouTube, take a look at some of those races from the 70s and 80s. They were intense. All right, we'll do that all in a second. First, Zycoat Heat, the enemy of speed. Zybar, revolutionary high temp coatings, dissipates heat and increases performance of manifolds, headers, exhausts, intake, exhaust, manifolds, turbos, intakes. The turbos you can take apart and they'll do the housing, and that it just helps. Heat is the enemy. Under that hood, man, you got to turn the boost down. What did we learn? Boost, bar, pounds,
14.7 and 100 kps. I don't even know what it is.
Anyway, we'll learn all about that, but you want to turn that boost up. You want to get rid of that heat, and that's why you want the Zybar. Increases horsepower, torque, reduces metal surface and underhood temperatures, and for our listeners who aren't do-it-yourselfers, you can visit Zycoat.com, click on coating services, and Zycoat will coat your parts. Send them in. I think you're back in 15 days. So just
send them, or less.
Send them the header. Send them the manifold. Zycoat.com, and do it yourself or have them do it. Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but got a minute. Get it on. And welcome to Castrol CarCast. I'm Adam Carolla. That's the motorator, Matt DeAndrea, over
Hello.
There. What's going on, man?
Oh, just doing car stuff.
What are you doing?
All kinds of car stuff. Bought a truck. We talked about that on the show with Goldberg this week. Driving a new Acura TLX. I'm a truck guy now. That's how I roll. I'm a truck guy.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm going to get it, but... but I'm going to figure it out.
I was driving around the Infiniti.
Yeah.
That's a big rig.
It is.
And it's good.
QX80, big full-size SUV.
It's good. It's good. It's a little bigger than I need, but it's good. It's good to pile the girls in there, my daughter and her friends, and take them out to Malibu and just sit up high and all that. My only beef is the mileage indicator. Once it gets to 33 left to go in the tank, it just flatlines.
That's it. I've seen this before. Like, I want to say it's like a Jeep Grand Cherokee or something I was driving.
I have that. I have had that happen. But I've had it in other cars, which is it flatlines with 30 miles left.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't need, when I look down and see 187 left in terms of range.
Yeah, who cares?
I don't care.
Yeah.
it's only that last 30 miles that I care about.
I want to say the BMW E36 M3. You and I both had one of those, and it would turn into this flashing dash.
Right.
And I'm like, why? I need to know.
Those are the ones you need to know.
Yeah.
And by the way, I've had ones go down to like zero, and then I think I've had ones cut off at like 10 or something.
Yeah,
but
I think
don't cut off at 33.
I think the BMW might have cut off at like 9 or something like that. It's just like, I remember that thing flash. I'm like, I got to be 4 miles into this flashing. What do I do? Like, because I think it said 9. I think it said 7.
Scott Dixon, by the way, Indy driver, serious Indy driver, is going to come in a second. He's third on all time in Indy wins. Did you know that? Behind AJ Foyt and Mario Andretti. Mario, we're going to see doing a car cast coming up in Portland soon. But third all time,
That's
Scott
fantastic.
Dixon. And nominated, by the way, for his six nominations for ESPY, for Best Driver.
Yeah.
So lots going on with that guy. We're going to bring him in a couple of few, and we'll talk to him all about Indy, which I feel, and you tell me, I feel like it is having a resurgence. Was there a problem with Indy and CART and competition with Indy and CART or confusion with Indy and CART a few years ago, some years ago? Huh?
Then a merger, I guess?
All I know is a fairly, well, casual but consistent observer of Indy is I think if there was some sort of chart, it would have been down 5, 8, 10 years ago, and I feel like it's up now.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I like watching the Indy 500 and the race we have here, Long Beach. You know, I like that race. We both went out this year and watched some racing, and I feel like that event has gotten bigger over the years, the past few years.
Right.
Just bigger and bigger.
Right.
By the way, Long Beach Grand Prix is a great party. What a great place to race, I guess.
Yes. I mean, Scott's won the IndyCar Championship in 03, 08, 2013, 15, and last year in 18. Finished third in his class at Le Mans. Raced there 16, 19. I'm interested.
Yeah, actually, I want to get
what
some
was Scott driving
that,
in Le Mans?
I think he won his class in Le Mans.
Finished third. Oh, well, here's how. I don't know. This could be Dylan. It could be Chris.
Let's find
out. He probably finished third and won his class at Le Mans, but we don't know.
We'll have to talk
about
that.
We'll have to figure that one.
Maybe GTLM?
I made the bio. It's not Dylan.
Uh-huh.
But I have class position third.
We'll get into it with Scott.
All right. Why don't we... Let's see. Give me one more second here. So what are we doing? We're getting ready to go to Laguna Seca. We're doing all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And
speaking of Indy, let me throw this out here. I've got tickets. I've got a couple pairs of tickets to the IndyCar race in September at Laguna Seca. And I've got some tickets to NASCAR at Bristol, I want to say August 17th. Mm-hmm. How do they get those?
Email us carcastshow@gmail.com. We'll randomly select some listeners and get them hooked up with some tickets to the Speedway.
You've been driving a F-Pace around for a week?
Yeah.
How's that?
F-Pace SVR.
Oh.
It's 550 horsepower. It's an animal.
Jag?
Yeah, the Jaguar F-Pace SVR.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. So you had an F-Pace for a minute.
Right.
But you had the kind of the entry version with...
I remember, again... Little weird things. Like I remember going, all right, well, sign me up for Sirius XM. And they're like, well, we're going to have to get a separate receiver and antenna. And I was like, oh, no, it's built in. They got to activate it. And they're like, now you got to get a separate receiver.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute. What year is it? First off, a Ford Focus from 2011 has it built into the thing. Why isn't it just built into the thing? Everyone has built into the thing. Just activate. It's like, no, you got to get a separate antenna and receiver. And I'm like, but this is a Jag, and it's 2018. Why would we have that? Why wasn't it built in? I remember at little bits and pieces of that kind of going, why not? There's certain... Like I like Jag, but then I was like, I want a heat, I want a cooler, I want an air conditioner in the seat or whatever. Like, nah, I don't have that. I'm like, I don't know, you're Jag. Why don't you have all that stuff?
Apparently they do. You just didn't have it.
all right,
Chris, see if you can bring up my social media. You got to see the color on this thing, and then you got to see the seats because the seats will win you over. When you get to the SVR, by the way, the SVR is $79,990 base. 89,000 as tested with the big wheels, big brakes, 550 horsepower. It sounds fantastic. And look at that. Look at those like a sports seat, good
very
bolstering.
Deep, very bolstery.
And very diamond stitchy.
Right. Looks good. The color is almost it's kind of a Laguna Seca or Laguna Blue that they had. BMW had the M3, the E, what do you got, a 46?
Yeah.
I think the E46 came out in this special color, and it was like they called it Laguna Blue or Laguna Seca Blue. I don't know, Max Pat, if you can find that.
Yeah,
but
it's very similar
to that. Was sort of the color. It's a, I don't know, it's not a dark blue, it's a medium blue. that just looks really sporty.
This, I think Jaguar claims 0 to 60 in like 4.3 seconds, but it's been tested as fast as 3.7.
The fact that it's got four doors, it's an SUV, it's all-wheel drive.
It's all-wheel drive.
And your sub fours is unbelievable.
Yeah, it was fun to drive. Fantastic.
Let me hit JB Weld real quick here for big or small projects. We're proud to have JB Weld Epoxy Adhesives as our sponsor. We use it at home, the garage, the studio, wherever we want and everywhere. It's jbweld.com. You can get it at Home Depot and Amazon and everywhere, all the auto parts stores as well. All right, so you're driving that. Scott Dixon is waiting in the wings. Want to talk to him about all this indie stuff. Want to talk to him
about Le Mans, too. I'm a little curious.
Le Mans, well, you think he won his class.
I want to know what he drove.
Third in his class at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. All right. Put a note there. Max Pat said what he drove, if you go class, because we don't know what he drove, but we can bring him in here and ask him. So why don't we bring in Scott Dixon, five-time IndyCar Series champion, Scott Dixon. Yeah. It's going to be this Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern on NBCSN is where they're going to have the Toronto Grand Prix, or the Indy, Honda Indy in Toronto. Scott is the defending winner there. He's won there three total times on that track. Scott is in good. Put the headphones on. Max Pat will get him set up. Good to see you, Scott Dixon.
Great to see you guys.
Oh, hey, how are you?
Hold on a sec. Got to turn the mics on. There we go. We're a little shorthanded here today. You heat it up.
There we go. Try that again.
Is it working now?
Yeah.
There he is. Thanks for having me.
Scott, first, just because we're all up in Le Mans mode here, what did you drive at Le Mans? What class?
GT Pro, is it? GTLM? GT Pro, I think they call it there, because they're Pro and M. The 4 GT. It was their resurrection of the 50th anniversary from 16.
Come on, Max Pata, that's a big car for us.
4 GT.
Yeah. Awesome. And you drove when they brought it back in, 16. Was it 16 is when they brought it back?
16 was the first year back.
And they brought three cars.
Four
cars. Yeah. Who was on your team? Who was in your car with you?
So there was the UK team and then the American team. Right. I was on the American team with Ryan Briscoe and Richard Westbrook. And then the other car was, I think, Dirk Muller, Joey Hand, and Sebastian Bourdais was in the other American car. So they actually won the race. We were third.
Yeah, well, that holds. So, we got that worked out.
Yeah.
That GT, so I've heard through discussing with, was I talking to Frank Keating about that?
Yeah, maybe.
I think so. At Goodwood, I think. Yeah, I was talking to him about it.
It would have been him.
The deal is back in the day, you could drive a Ford GT in the 60s at Le Mans. But you couldn't drive it at 10/10. It would break, you know. And I've talked to those guys. Like, I talked to Dan Gurney about how to save the brakes at the end of Le Mans. He'd be like, I put that thing downshifted into, I don't know, third, and just let the car slow itself. like stay off the brakes, you know. So it's like, obviously, Dan Gurney is talking to me about not going that hard. You know, if it was a half-hour sprint, he'd be on it. But he's not. So you guys have more comfort and more technology and more safety, but you have to drive. Now you can drive the car 10/10 for 24 hours. Is that a correct statement?
It's a 24-hour sprint race. It is. Right. It's flat out. It's very tough. You know, and back then there was two drivers, right? I think now the maximum you can have is three, or you have to have three because you have. Yeah. I think you can only drive for a maximum of 4 hours in a 6-hour window or something like that. But it's hard now. It's flat out, and then this category too in GT Pro. It's big fields, you know. That was for the outright win in the 60s, obviously 66 through 69 or whatever they won four in a row. But, you know, now it's a class of about 18 or 20, which is probably the most difficult class. The prototypes now are really, it's only been Toyota for the last 2 years. And then prototype two, which is a pretty tough class as well. But it's a great race. You know, I was lucky to go with Chip Ganassi Racing, the same team I race with in IndyCar. So it made it a very easy transition and to go to to Le Mans for the first time. Our team did win with the sister car coming in first, and we came in third. So it was definitely for the 50th anniversary to go back and win was astonishing.
Yeah, and what a great car to drive in that event. Yeah. I mean, it's cool. It's cool to drive a Vet. It's cool to drive a 911, but it's better to drive the Ford GT.
But you've done Le Mans a few times just in the Ford GT?
So I've only been part of the Ford program, yeah. So it's, you know, that was the last race this year for that effort.
Yeah.
So, you know, it will be interesting to see. You know, there's the category is changing a lot, right? You know, the World Endurance Championship and also the ACO, they've brought in the new hypercar, which will start next year, I think, with Toyota, and then also Valkyrie with the Aston Martin. So it's an interesting transition, but they've tried to, you know, the budgets were $200-300 million a year when Porsche and Audi and all them were going at it with Toyota, whereas now they're trying to, you know, crush that down to around $30 million a year. So I think they'll have a big influx of other manufacturers, which will get it back to where it should be.
So you're saying the Aston Martin Valkyrie is going to race in the GT category?
No, that'll be in the hypercar. So that will be what's known now is for the outright win for prototype class. Yeah.
The hypercar class will have what makes and what vehicles in it?
So I think at the moment, the only two that have signed up is the Toyota hypercar, which they've already started running. I think I saw some clips like maybe on YouTube or something, and then the Valkyrie. That's it at the moment. But then, you know, I think McLaren's meant to be coming in, BMW,
like
there's a ton. Ford, I think, are even looking at it as well.
Do they, I'm trying to picture a hypercar. I'm trying to picture a Toyota hypercar.
Yeah.
I can't physically picture it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what it is.
Pretty interesting.
Do they have to homologate
I know what the Valkyrie looks like.
I know what the Valkyrie looks like too, but they've made street versions of it or versions of it.
They're supposed to.
It's going into production, the Valkyrie, But I think they're going back to kind of the old school rules maybe of going to a production of at least 25 cars.
Yeah, so it looks... That's it, yeah. Right. It
just looks like a race car.
Right. I tend to like these. I don't like when cars become sort of futuristic space traveling machines. Like, I don't even really like the aesthetic of F1 anymore. It's like the aesthetic in the 70s was so great, you know, with Elf and John Player Special and Ferrari, big barrel tires in the back, smaller in the front.
Yeah. Lots now, of
this is why we were talking about like Goodwood Revival and stuff when we were doing the other show.
Yeah, and the hypercars have brought it back a little more toward what a car looks like versus the GTP stuff or the LM whatever stuff that looks just sort of crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I think a lot of people were hoping they were going to go back to maybe GT1 spec where, you know, it would be like a Ford GT, but you know, the unfortunate part of the balance of performance that everybody races in that category now is that, you know, the road car has almost, I don't know, 700 horsepower. But the race car has only 500 horsepower.
Yeah,
right.
They're so detuned that it's just, you know, I don't know which is the limiting factor. I think it's the Porsche or the Corvette, you know, and everybody gets detuned to that spot that everybody has, you know, basically the same speed. So going to the GT1 spec, I think, would have been quite exciting. But obviously, they've gone down the road of the hypercar, which will be interesting. Yeah.
Well, the Porsche, they're probably going down to the Porsche if the Porsche's not running a turbo, it's a flat, naturally aspirated six.
Yep.
They're not going to get more than 500 horsepower out of that engine. They're just not going to with the displacement it has. You know, I'm sure the Vet
and could endurance get horsepower.
It. But also, why not give a turbo, let the Porsche run a turbo, bump it up to 750 horsepower, whatever. You can get whatever you want once you put a turbo in there, because the Ford is a six-cylinder, but it's running turbos, it can make whatever it wants as well. Either way.
Yeah, it's an interesting category, because the Porsche is not even a 911, right? I think it's on a Cayman chassis. So they went to a mid-engine because they needed to add the rear diffuser, whereas on the 911 you couldn't add a rear diffuser.
Oh yeah.
So there is some strange configurations out there.
I don't know.
But
we need to talk to Patrick Long, I think, a little bit more about that, right?
Yeah, yeah. He would know exactly. Yeah. I'm probably not meant to say something like that, because it's, you know, it's not really a car.
But it doesn't exist in a factory form, but it's
starting to stretch.
It's not unlike my 79 Datsun 280ZX twin turbo car that's in the next shop. It's got a V8 in the front of it. There's no manufacturer.
It didn't come that way.
It didn't come that way. No. And it's got two turbochargers. Yeah. And so it's like, how do you get that across the governing body where you're driving a car that doesn't exist and you're going, no, no, it's a Japanese V8 in there. And it's like, yeah, I know, but nobody ever made this car. Bob Sharp told me, Bob Sharp said,
Bob Sharp,
because all the, hi, this is Bob Sharp. When he answers the phone, I answer the phone like this. Hello?
Hello?
Who is this? What do you want?
What?
He just goes, hi, Bob Sharp here. Because he's a car salesman, you know. If I called Bob Sharp right now, he'd answer his phone. Bob Sharp.
Bob Sharp.
So I said to Bob, he's like, yeah, yeah. All the 935 Porsche guys were all pissed off when we brought this car out because it's got a V8, 933 horsepower and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah. Well, they had a point, you know, because they're running engines that come in their cars and you're not. And he's like, I told him, relax. I said, Paul put this thing on the pole at like Pocono.
Yeah.
And if Paul wins the race, then we can have another discussion.
Yeah,
but
right now,
he hasn't run the race. He's on the pole, but he hasn't won anything yet. And then if he wins, we can have another meeting. Right now, as far as I can tell, we got all this press out here because Paul put this car on the pole. So you're welcome. And he left.
What a marketer. Such a salesman.
And then the car broke. And then they didn't have to have another meeting.
Nobody bitched about it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. Fantastic.
So, Scott, you're going this Sunday is the Indy in Toronto.
That's right.
Trying to think of, I don't think I've been on that track. We've never been on that track, have we?
No.
Indy.
It's fun, man.
Which track is it?
It's the street race, so it's downtown.
Oh, it's a street race.
Yeah.
I was just trying to think where a track would be in Toronto.
I don't even know the first year, but I know it's been running since the 90s, but it's gone through some changes over the years as a lot do.
How many races now in the series are the street race versus the ovals?
I think it's maybe 12 and 5 or something like that. So there's maybe only 4 or 5 ovals. You know, it has changed a lot. I think when I first came into IndyCar in the early 2000s, it was maybe 50-50. And same with Indy Lights back in those days too. So it has gone more road course based, you know, throughout.
Yeah. It seems... Well, I don't know. What's more challenging, a street course or an oval?
They both are. They're just so different. You know, I think you're mentally an oval, especially, you know, like maybe the Indianapolis 500, you know, the speeds are so high, the car is so light on downforce, it's moving around constantly. It's just mentally, after that three-hour race, you are drained because, you know, one, you've got the cars running around, at the same time at very high speeds. You know, you're confined by concrete walls and fences that can be, you know, shredders and things like that. So it's street course is a lot more physical, you know, because it's bumpy. It's, lots of braking, you know, shifting, the acceleration, is pretty intense. So, you know, they're just so different. But that's what I love about IndyCar racing is that it's so diverse. You know, you do short track ovals to super speedways like Indianapolis to street courses in Toronto to road courses. You know, I think Mid-Ohio is next up on the road course list. So.
Right. All different. And not only is the street course are bumpy, but there's no camber in any of the turns. Sometimes some of them are like off camber and stuff. You have to figure out a lot of stuff.
Sears Point is the one you're not a huge fan of.
Well, Sonoma.
Yeah, Sonoma.
Infineon. Whatever.
I don't know what they call it now.
No, it's technical.
Yeah.
You got to figure that track
bumpy,
out a little bit.
Like, I went around it in a, I don't know, it was a Ferrari Challenge. I went around it up there and it seemed bumpy.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Like it's an older circuit for sure. Like it's probably due for a bit of an update. We don't go there anymore. Our last race at Sonoma was last year, but I don't know. It's a hard track, much like Laguna Seca is, in the fact that it's quite low grip. So the car slides around a lot. There's a lot of elevation changes, so it's really hard to pick your marks or over crests and things like that. So it's easy to catch you out. And the thing that I always found so frustrating with Sonoma was that you know, kind of in the afternoon, the wind would shift, the track would totally change, then all the dry dust would be on the track, and you know, you'd be setting up for qualifying times or getting ready to go, and you'd go out and you'd be like a second slower, you know. So it's definitely a track that with the heat and wind changed, you know, changed a ton, but that's, I think, just due to
it's amazing how so much of that can affect.
That's huge.
Because you guys are just so at the limit the whole time, the slightest little, you know, like is it change in weather? Something. And
well,
just
certainly
wind.
Any dust on that track is just complete game changer.
About a real game changer.
It's funny, like growing up when I did junior categories or even go-karts, you never really thought about the weather much or you know, but track temperature now just, you know, one, the engine doesn't perform as well, you know, because they're so highly stressed now that any kind of, you know, adjustment with the ambient condition really hurts it, or, you know, the tires just, you know, once they get hot, just are no good, you know. So it is one of those things that, you know, growing up, you never really thought too much about. But for us now, going into a qualifying session, you know, you're constantly looking at the weather, you know, what wind direction, you know, even for gearing now, you know, you're changing gears on a road course by, you know, less than 100 RPM to make sure you had the right gear.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have questions about gears. I will say that doing a Trans Am race a couple of years ago, the tires, when they're cold, are like used. I just spun right off the track in this Corvette, just barely blipped the throttle. It was like, boom, went right off. But then later on in the race, they were too hot, and they got all marbly, and they're sliding all over the place. Yeah. And it went from, so like cold, worthless, hot, worthless.
Yeah.
It's kind of like right, there's a kind of a sweet spot in the middle, which works really well. And once you get under it or past it, there's failure.
That's why every vintage race is like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Because those cars
you
are
stay
expensive.
Right in that window.
In that nice window. You get a few laps in that window.
Yeah, big slick tire when it's cold is not a whole lot of fun.
Yeah. Let me tell you guys a little bit about Castrol Edge real quick. Castrol Edge is stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction. Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure to keep metal apart and fight power-robbing friction to unlock exhilarating performance. It's three times stronger than the leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown per the Kurt Orban test in the 5W30 VIS grade. Edge formula always exceeds industry's toughest standards, but the new and improved formula incorporates the latest technology that make it transform to be the strongest when pressure is highest. Check out Castrol Edge.
So, Scott, let's talk gears for a second.
We're going to get technical
now. The Indy car you drive is paddle shift now.
Paddle shift, yeah.
Does it blip the throttle for you on the downshift?
It does.
Okay. It does. Give me one of those steering wheels. Or put it on my 510.
Is there a clutch in it? Do you use the clutch to get out of the pit, like first gear, and then paddle only? Or
So the clutch is paddle too. So there's only two pedals, you know, just your accelerator and brake, big pedals right at you know, your feet. But then you have a clutch pedal either side. Or you can do any configuration you want, really, and then you have, you know, right and left for up and down, but it does everything for you. That's why we always joke, if, you know, something looks wrong in the data, I'll be like, you know, talking to my teammate, I'll be like, man, it looks like you missed the shift, you know. But of course you can't do it. It's all controlled.
You can not shift at all, but
it's still a big, you know, you're trying to look for that perfect seamless shift that the manufacturers are constantly chasing. And you know, with the configuration of the IndyCar now with their gearboxes, it's still very hard to get a very smooth shift.
The power plant. Matt and I were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, not in preparation for this. we just talk about stupid car stuff. And you were online and you were looking at the Indy power plant. Honda and, are there two?
It was GM.
Honda GM. Were the engines in the...
What is, it was a small displacement, right?
Yeah.
2.2 liter.
In a
twin
V.
Turbo.
In a V6.
Six. Yep.
Yeah. So that's a small displacement in a V configuration.
Absolutely, yeah.
So high RPM.
They limit those a little. Like it's about, I think it's 12,000 RPM, I think.
That's high.
Or 12 and a half, yeah.
Well, that's, but that's super high. I mean, in a V configuration.
And they limit it, what, for the car or like per track?
No, it's for durability, right? You know, gone are the days where we would have four engines a weekend. Now we have four engines for a whole season. So yeah. they have to reach, you know, 2,500 to 3,000 miles each engine. So I think it's to try and help those, you know, costs. And it never really does, though. You know, the durability goes through such a transformation, and the materials and metals and stuff they use, I think a lot of time end up costing them more. So
there's always a way to spend money
in
racing.
Yeah, yeah they do.
Not
they
a lot of saving money.
Yeah.
Do they have a diameter intake on the throttle body or something? I mean, what governs the horsepower?
Boost.
Oh, boost.
Yeah, boost and displacement.
So
everything else is pretty open.
Twin
and
turbo,
your RPM.
2.2, 12 or 12 and a half on the RPM, and then they let you run X amount of bar or pounds. What is it, 17?
But then you got the fun button, the cheat button.
Overtake.
Yeah,
I think it's I think
or 13 pound. What is it?
They
bar
talk,
per
they
pound.
14.7.
Yeah, I knew. And Matt's good for one thing and one thing only. When you can't figure out pounds, the bar, and the boost, he jumps in and saves the day. So you run how many bar or pound?
I think it's probably we use KPA. I don't know.
Damn it!
There must be a conversion. Where's that?
What is
KPA is that, to boost to bar? What's the turbo pressure in KPA?
It's probably some Newton thing or something like
See,
that.
Now it doesn't make any sense.
Now it's one more thing for Matt to remember.
Yeah. Damn it!
But yeah, I think
we don't use that because I learned 14.7 from flying.
Oh, so I was wondering
why
KPA
was like, we don't do that.
You knew it. You're right. So I'm a pound guy, but then the Porsche I have has a bar boost in there, and
I see,
you can do the math.
I see one bar equals 100 KPA.
Oh, so there you go. It's just the final.
So 14.7 pounds is 100 KPA.
I guess so. Well, that's
easier. That sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Metric, they're smart in the metric.
So we're 150 KPA on road courses, but the overtake is 165 KPA, I think.
So you're 20-something, 21 pounds.
Pounds, yeah.
Overtake kicks it up to
165, I think.
How do they monitor that, or how's that regulated?
So it's regulated by a boost, an electronic boost sensor on the plenum.
Mm-hmm.
Which is controlled by IndyCar, and then if it goes over it, then you get an overboost, which then limits the engine. It reduces. Actually, it just puts in a hard limiter. So you sit on the hard limiter for maybe 3 seconds, and then it takes it out again.
How long can you use it for a race? You can use it as many times as you want, or whenever you want during a race.
I wish you could use it as many times. Well,
but,
you can,
but up
theory.
To like up to whatever. It's like
so. It's a timed event now. So you get 200 seconds on some of the bigger circuits and 150 seconds on some of the shorter ones.
But 150 seconds you can use
in whichever way you want. It used to be
because I saw Fast and Furious 1, and he was always like too soon, Junior.
That's right.
Hits the nitrous button at the end.
And you know, I always thought the Mazda RX-7 was a unibodied car, but the floorboards came unscrewed.
Just right out of there.
They used diamond steel for the floorboard.
Diamond plate, no carpet.
Came unscrewed. Because you know, when you're working on an RX-7 and you want to get to the ground, but you can't figure out how to get to what's under the car, you got to take that plate off so you can access the floor.
There must have been 13 screws that came out of that thing. Like, not one nylon nut on there? Just one to hold it in place?
Yeah, put a lock washer on there.
Just a dab of
Loctite?
Of Loctite? Just a
but the
dab.
Overtake used to get 10 for 15 seconds. So it was annoying if you pushed it or accidentally hit it, and it would run out 15 seconds. And some people would do it under caution. You know, you'd be talking on the radio, you'd maybe hit the overtake, and it would just, you know, bleed off all that time, which was totally annoying. But now it's controlled.
The 150 seconds that you get, I mean, is there an indicator?
Somebody's keeping track
you
have right?
information on the
wheel. You know, you go to
it's
hit it, it doesn't work.
It's all on the wheel.
You're like, damn.
Yeah, you can put whatever you want now, and I think you have up to 8 pages of data that you can look at on your screen.
Do they scroll down from 150 seconds down, so it goes that direction, kind of makes sense.
But I guess you can do whatever you like.
And it's there and you could set it up to go up or go down.
Yep.
It's an interesting sort of...
I feel like the Whittington brothers kind of did that.
The Whittington brothers,
with their Porsche and their secret nitrous kit.
Oh, yeah. The only problem is everybody else gets it, too.
Yeah, that's how everybody else gets it.
It's an interesting process because, like, when you're driving a car and it's got a bunch of gauges on it, like sometimes there's some weird gauge that's like, you know, manifold pressure or something. Like, I don't want to look at that. Like, I want to look at the temp. I want the temp, the oil temp, the water temp. You know, I just put a piece of tape over some stuff because I don't even want it there. Like, why is it there?
Decoration.
When we drove that, if that goes bad, it's going to break anyway. So
we drove the Trans Am vet. Remember when I came in, like after qualifying, I'm like, I don't know what's going on with this dash. Like, I can't see anything on this dash. And he's like, guy goes, oh, you had it in pit mode.
Oh,
and I go, I didn't have it in any mode. I've never even touched it.
I've never even been in the car until now.
You left it in pit mode and put me out on a track. I don't know what gear I'm in or what my RPMs are. And he's like, well, you got to put it into track mode. I'm like, oh, what do you think I'm going to do? Like, start grabbing buttons on this thing?
That happens all the time in the Ford GT, because even the mechanics and engineers have setup pages, right, that you have to scroll through. But then you get in the car and you go out and you're scrolling through tons of pages to try and get to you need. Yeah. But even in the IndyCar, the Indy 500 this year, I got into it in practice, and you know, you scroll through the pages to get more information, and they'd actually put a picture of a sheep on mine.
I was going to say, did they leave you notes?
You can
notes
put pictures, you can put videos on there, you can put all kinds of stuff. So I had a very lovely sheep on mine, which was interesting.
That's not distracting at all during practice.
I worked with one guy from New Zealand named Fraser. He actually gave me Vegemite in his camper van, but I thought Vegemite, people think Australia, but it must be big in New Zealand too.
Yeah, so Vegemite and Marmite, that's always the debate. But I think Marmite is, I don't know, New Zealand might be more Marmite, Vegemite is more Australian maybe. I don't know, but there's always a big debate between the two.
This guy, Fraser, he was nuts in a fun way, but not nuts. And I sort of went, he was fun. Like, I'll tell you how nuts this guy Fraser from New Zealand was. We were doing earthquake rehab on a building downtown, and at some point there was some old lady named like Millie, and she was celebrating her 90th birthday, and she'd been in this building since they built it in like 1921 or something. And so they're like, we want to gather everybody up in front of the building with Millie and the crew and everybody, and we'll take a picture with this 90-year-old woman in front of this building she's lived in her whole life. Now, I felt bad for her because it's a little shitty apartment. Like, I've lived here my whole life. Like, okay. Yeah. What if I never moved out of my
top floor
parents' house? Like, it's a little shitty room. But anyway, we all gathered around out front. They're like, come on, everyone, get in, stop your work, gather up. And got everyone around. And the guy got like on a ladder and he got a camera and he was like, move in. And Fraser stood in the middle. He put his arm around Millie, and then he let this colossal fart go. And everyone's like, God damn it, Fraser. Oh! And everyone just cleared out, and they never came back. We never took the picture with Millie.
Oh, really? No.
And was that's how nuts this guy was. But he's like, I'm from New Zealand. I'm nuts. Yeah. We're all nuts. Oh. But fun nuts.
Fun nuts.
But it's fun nuts. And then I'm from North Hollywood, so I'm like, well, everyone from New Zealand is fun nuts. Is that a fair statement?
That is probably a good statement and very true. You got to go down to New Zealand. Like it's an amazing spot.
It's a great big muscle car collection. Yeah, a lot of car guys.
There's so much racing history. You know, if you look at the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, with Bruce McLaren, Chris Amon, you know, Denny Holm. You know, there was a whole lot of history, especially through that period. So growing up, that's all racing.
It's funny. I mean, it's crazy when you take a look at some of that V8 action over there. Yeah. Like, if you ever take a deep dive, I think, if you take a deep dive on the internet to, like, 70s V8 New Zealand Australian racers, those guys were going at it like maniacs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, they're going nuts with those cars on those tracks. Like, crazy. Like, it's really intense and hairy and dangerous looking, man.
Just raw, you know, and
raw,
and that's what it was really about, you know, and you know, the tracks were too, you know, if you came off or slid off, you know, there was consequences, man. You hit like a big grass bank or something, you know, it was going to knock you about.
You had parents that were racers?
Yeah,
that's
my dad
got into it.
Yeah, raced a mixture of things, whether it was rally cars or saloon cars, to a bit of go karting and a bit of everything. Mum did a little bit of dirt racing when they owned a speedway actually in Townsville, in Australia, when we moved over there for a period in my younger life.
What track did your dad own?
My dad owned Orange County International Raceway, Button Willow, Willow Springs, and Thermal. No. dad owned an apartment in North. Oh, he didn't own an apartment. No, he rented an apartment
in North
Hollywood.
Probably with that 90-year-old woman as his roommate.
So, no, this was a very small dirt track that they kind of owned for a period of years and then later sold on. But, I don't know. Those were my best memories, man.
Aren't the Millens?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Millen brothers.
So Steve Millen came in here and we were like, what's it like racing in Australia? And he got so mad because he's from New Zealand.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I'm from New Zealand. I was like, I know. We don't really know much of the difference here. Which one is Eric Bana from? Because he likes to race.
He's Australian.
He's Australian.
Yeah.
So we won't mention him then.
Yeah. Oh, because he did that documentary, right? It was The Beast or whatever it was.
Yeah,
that
but
was
he
pretty
was here a while back, and Adam took him over to see the
He was, God, I was going to say, I was sort of calling his Beast like a Chevelle, but I don't know what it was in Australia, like a Mad Max 15 or something.
Yeah.
Like he had Eric Bana's V8. In Australia was a...
Is it like a Holden or a
Falcon? Probably like a
Holden.
I imagine...
I don't even remember what it
we
was.
We just took some American cars, and here they called them a Chevelle, and there they called it a Holden or something.
Well, the Holden is kind of the Chevy of Australia, I guess. I don't know. Chris might be able to find
car.
What was Bana working on the whole time? The Beast, I guess, is the story of him... And constant
that
rebuilding
car,
and upgrading and whatever his car.
I don't know. Ford Falcon.
Oh, it's a Ford
Falcon. Falcon.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah. 74.
And then he crashed it, right?
I don't even know if we were making Ford Falcons out here in the 70s or 74. I feel like that's a 60s car.
We had them
stopped.
We had them in the 60s. And you're right. I think after the Mustang.
When did Ford stop making the Falcon in the United States?
Oh, that's funny because that car looks like a Mustang, right? It looks like a 74-ish kind of...
Yeah, it's a Gran Torino looking kind of car, Bana. But anyway, muscle, V8.
Looks like a lot of fun.
New Zealand, Australia. I don't abide by sticking with one car and working on it your whole life.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about women. I feel like you got to move on to the next model every year. And when I say model, model year.
Yeah.
You move on to the next model.
I've been trying.
All right.
So the Ford Falcon in North America was from 1960 to 1970.
Right.
And in Australia, it was 1960 to 2016.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. They don't know when to let it go, man.
I think Holden was the same, right?
Yeah, Holden was the same.
GM version of it, and they just kept running the Holden. I don't even know. There was many versions, but...
Yeah. Then they brought us the Pontiac GTO here.
Yeah.
In the, 2000, 2004, somewhere around there?
Yeah.
But it was the Holden that was doing well there, and it came here, and it didn't do well.
It didn't do well at all.
But it was kind of a sporty...
It was a two-door, right?
But it was kind of a sleeper muscle car. You know, it had the good engine and stuff in it, but kind of...
I'll say that, like, when Ford brought back the Thunderbird, that was like, all right, swing and a miss.
That didn't work.
Yeah. When they brought back the GTO, I saw a few of those, and like the specs and the looks, and they were like, oh, that's a pretty cool piece.
Yeah, and they could be fast. I'm sure Ken Ligonvilla has 9 of them.
That he got from Meekum and
Kissimmee.
All right, let me hit JB Weld for big or small repair projects, home or garage. You need JB Weld. You need something that lasts. We don't like to use the household glues because that's not industrial grade. We use JB Weld around here. They have you put it in your toolbox, put it in your kitchen drawer, you put it in your craft room. Good for metal, wood, plastic, and more. Made in the USA. where we stopped making the Falcon in 1970 because we knew better. Pros and DIYers have trusted JB Weld for more than 50 years. I always used to do the JB Weld for the metal repair, but now they're doing all kinds of epoxies and all kinds of crazy glues and polyurethane that doesn't foam up. Like those other, I hate that foaming glue.
There's a box in the room, and I walked in. They said, you counted everything in there.
I weighed it.
Just to make sure.
I didn't count it. I waited.
I didn't want people. One missing?
Yeah, because they could use a few drops of the crazy glue and put it back.
Oh, yeah.
I said, no way, man.
No way.
Your sunglasses break, that's on you. Fix it at home. Available at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, O'Reilly, everywhere else as well. It's JB Weld, world's strongest bond.
Yeah.
So, Scott, how do you, if they change the configuration of the track at Toronto, how are you so consistently successful on that track?
I think most of it stays the same, right? Like the last few years, the last four corners have changed a bit. But, you know, I think our street course cars have been very good. So, you know, they typically, you know, a Long Beach setup or a St. Pete setup to a Toronto are just, you know, close variations. You know, Long Beach is always kind of its own unique thing. And then Detroit kind of is too, just because of the surface. But yeah, I don't know. I think Toronto is...
You could say sheer talent.
It's a team effort, man. It's a team effort. And the car's always been good there. But it's also... it's a short track. There's a lot of action going on. I feel it suits my driving style quite a bit, you know, and trying to generate that tire heat, which I think is always a big thing that you need to do at Toronto.
Do you have anything, I don't want to call it a bucket list, but maybe I did, but you have a list like, okay, done Le Mans, other events, I don't know, Pikes Peak or... You tell us a vintage race at the Goodwood track in a saloon car, or you know, you want to get back to that V8 Australian New Zealand type of driving.
And we talked about Classic Le Mans, which is next year.
Classic Le Mans.
Yeah. Like, you gotta come to that. You know, it's in July maybe.
We're planning. We're trying to get everywhere, but you tell us. Are there things you're thinking about?
So Le Mans, still would love to win Le Mans. I think, you know, I've been lucky enough to win Daytona a few times. Le Mans is still one of those, you know, major events that you want to win outright, especially, which is tough, you know, especially with manufacturers these days and trying to cross. Between
and to win out right now, you got to be in the crazy
really
prototype.
Exactly. Bathurst 1000 for sure is one that I almost had an opportunity to do it, you know, this year, but it actually conflicted with Petit Le Mans that we have in Atlanta with the last race for the 4GT, so we couldn't do that this year. Going to try and do Bathurst 12-hour, which comes up in February. Another one you guys should try and get to is Rod Millen, as we were talking about the Millens, has the Leadfoot Festival, which is in New Zealand, which is kind of a smaller version of Goodwood Festival. And you run up his driveway, and it's a fun event too. So I've been lucky enough to do a ton of great and exciting events, but Le Mans, Bathurst, you know, those are definitely the ones right at the top.
You need a big driveway. We need a driveway.
Yeah, there we go.
I did not know about Daytona. What were you driving? Were you driving the GT at Daytona?
So, yeah, the last 4 years have been the GT, the Ford GT. Previous to that, I think my first race at Daytona was maybe in 2004 with Scott Pruitt and Max Pappas, and that was a Toyota, I think. But then my first win came with Toyota at Daytona with Dan Weldon, the late Dan Weldon, Casey Mears. And then a few years later with Ford, actually, a couple of times with the Ford GT and then the DPI program before that. So, yeah.
We love Max Pappas.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun.
He's a fun guy.
He's a big personality, man.
He's a big personality.
It seems like only yesterday we're going down Shoreline at the Toyota Grand Prix, and he was banging my car from behind. Yeah. We're flat out. He's just kind of bumping me.
It's sad that celebrity race is gone now. That was good to watch. That last one, though, was crazy. I thought they were going to kill somebody in the... Do you remember that big crash in like turn 8 or whatever?
Because the last race, they qualified, and then they're like, it's last race. For fun, we're going to flip the order.
Oh, well.
So everybody in the back, and they just... And that race, everybody just kind of bangs their way through the lineup, you know, so they kind of it's always carnage.
They pulled a piece of safety equipment on the track without stopping the race, which is like, I don't know why you'd want a tow truck out there. It's everything that sort of...
It was Brett Davern, I think, and then somebody hit his car when they were getting him out of it.
Whenever anything goes wrong, it's always like a confluence of sort of bad coincidence-y things. Like, first off, it was around turn eight. It was around turn eight. Turn eight is blind. Yeah. You can't see past it. Then everybody was like, the yellows didn't mean shit because here's what would happen. If you stopped racing during a yellow, they'd just pass
Somebody else would pass.
Just kept racing. So nobody slowed down on any big waving yellows. Everyone's like, fuck it, I'm not slowing down. Max Pappas is going to catch me if I slow down.
And so start bumping you.
Everyone went around this corner and I went around it too and was like, oh shit, there's a car there. And then,
that car was so lucky.
Oh my gosh. That guy, it was home. We were just watching the video.
Did he break his leg or not?
No, he was okay. He just jumped in the air like a cat and just, he was fine. But they were watching the cars come around and they're like, why is nobody slowing down? Where's the yellow?
Well, that's because the professionals normally slow down, right?
There's a third. Yeah, so it's a blind corner. Yeah. Everyone ignores the yellows. By the way, what everyone's figured out is when they tell you something like, you know, like in the past, it'd go like the pros start 30 seconds behind the celebrities and anyone who jumps the gun is going to be, it's like, fuck it, do it, go. Because everyone figured out no one ever does anything.
Restart.
Here's your punishment. You get to get drunk earlier after this race with the guy who told you not to do that. Like, they go, exactly. We will pull you off this course. You will be black flag. And then the race starts. It's like, oh, fuck it. Everyone just races. Okay. So that's what everyone figured out. And then, whoever ran Brett Davern's car was right on the bumper of a guy who saw it. Yeah. He pulled out, and that's just been the scariest 0.3 seconds ever because he just pulled out and just was staring at the back of a car.
It kind of makes you wonder why they stopped doing that race.
Jeez. I feel like they're going to bring it back. Obviously, I don't think Toyota's going to bring it back. But
no, well, it'd be accurate now.
It was always that, like, for us, you know, it would always be right before qualifying or something. We'd be sitting in the engineering truck and we would have it all on the screens watching this race because the race was always very good to watch, you know, with the mix of, you know, amateurs and pros. And
it is entertaining. And actually, you bring it up, it would be kind of interesting. I know it's accurate, but it would be great to see a bunch of Civic Type R's out there because it would be such a jump for the performance of the cars.
And what it
maybe a little too much.
Maybe a little too much.
what it did, I know. But there's the one element, like there's the most important element of that race is not the pros and the amateurs or that mix. It's not my car.
Yeah.
And nobody gives a shit to this car. Because when it's your car, you drive differently. Or when it's your team owner's car and you have to answer to somebody, you don't drive like as big an asshole. When it is not your car and you're racing, nobody cares. Nobody cares. And I've done it where guys went through like four cars in practice and stuff. Like they blew it up or they busted it up or they crashed at the end of shoreline. And like someone would just go to them like, well, let's get you out of that car and let's see if we can find you another car. And they're like, okay. They wouldn't yell. They wouldn't like go, what the fuck? Come on now.
I want to say that when Goldberg did the race years ago, maybe it was qualifying or something, maybe it was during the race, something happened. He messed up. He felt like it was his fault. He got out of the car and he was mad. And he's a big dude, just punches the side view mirror, which breaks off the car. And then he gets to the locker room and he's like, broke my hand.
Wow.
No. He just broke his hand.
Oh, my God.
He's like, whatever.
But it's got to be like going indoor go-karting. It's the same way. Like, people just destroy those things. Well, at least when I go.
Yeah, when you go.
Most people destroy the go-karts.
They don't care. All right, let me tell you
about Geico. Everybody's got a to-do list. You drop off your dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Now you can save hundreds of dollars on car insurance, and you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. Just go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you want some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding to-do you can do today. check out geico.com.
We are going to be in Portland coming up on the 30th of August. That'll be the World of Speed Motorsports Museum. We'll be there with Mario Andretti.
Yeah.
And I'll inform him that you shall pass him in IndyCar victory soon, shortly. I'll be
yeah,
like,
but he's going to say, yeah, but when I did it, you know, we didn't have helmets.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll go, hey, with that hair, you didn't need a helmet, man.
He's a character, man. I love Mario. He's such a big part of our sport.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we're lucky to have, you know, both him and AJ and so many, you know, the others from that era that still come to the races all the time, you know. It's
and he was in the Newman film. You and I were talking about that before the show. He saw the Newman documentary.
Yeah.
Still into it. Still going strong. And we'll talk to him during our live show over there on the 30th. And then also Golden State Theater, August 17th. I'll be doing stand-up there. That's in Monterey. And that'll be after our race.
Yeah, coming to the track Saturday.
How's that for Pebble?
Yeah,
for the Rolex Historic. So coming out to the vintage race, your race to the 935.
Yes, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm going to do my stand up set in my fire suit.
Yeah,
awesome.
And I may wear my helmet too, but I will flip the visor up to get the microphone.
It may or may not be you in there. The Sting. On the same day, somebody's like, but I just saw Adam in the fire suit in Long Beach doing stand-up.
Well, if the guy up there is short and unfunny, that'll be Matt.
Yeah. I'll do it.
Scott Dixon, everybody. The Toronto Indy race, the Honda Indy Toronto race coming up this Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. NBCSN is where you can find it. We'll be watching, and you can check out his website, scottdixon.com, and shoot him a tweet at scottdixon9. Anything else, Scott? Do we got it all?
No, you guys covered a lot, you know.
Well, good luck at the ESPYs tonight. Yeah. As we record this, it's
we'll
the ESPYs tonight.
We're rooting for you.
Hopefully by you listen to this, you got an award.
That'd be nice.
And
we'll be walking around everywhere with it.
Until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Scott Dixon and Matt the Motorator DeAndrea saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.